And we like when we hear something here has been described as the jewel in the crown. High praise, as we've suggested. And indeed, it's a reference to part of the criminal justice system. The Woodlands facility is the envy of neighbouring jurisdictions, apparently, according to a report by the Inspectors for Criminal Justice Inspection Northern Ireland. But things, of course, aren't always rosy. I want to speak to Brendan McGuigan, who's the Chief Inspector of Criminal Justice in Northern Ireland. Now, Woodlands really does look after young people who have broken the law, and they're in custody. They're remanded there. They're sent there by the courts. But many of them sadly come from a residential care background. And 76% of those who went in last year were from a Catholic background as well. Brendan McGuigan. Brendan, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Brendan, there are pluses and there are minuses in all reports, but Woodlands is in line for praise this morning.
It absolutely is, and well-deserved. I think the management and staff at the centre have developed a really impressive child-centred ethos, and delivering a regime for the young people committed to its care there, and I think it is exceptional, and that needs to be recognised. The issues that I have raised in the report in relation to the high percentage of young Catholic boys ending up in the centre. We are talking about statistically small numbers, and some of these young boys have multiple admissions. So they're in for a short period of time, they're out, they're back in, and that can skew the picture. But there is a trend here, Frank, that we have been observing over the last number of years that says to us that this does need to be understood. Now, I accept that the Juvenile Justice Centre has no control over who's sent to them. And I'm trying to reinforce here, I have no concerns about the excellent care and compassion that's been shown to some very troubled young people. But what I'm saying is that, you know, it needs to be understood why these levels of young Catholic boys is increasing. And it's incumbent on the Youth Justice Agency, the Department of Justice, the police, prosecution and the courts to understand what's going on here.
So where would you start in terms of trying to get a message across?
Well, obviously, you know, when you look at the nature of the children who end up in this centre, many of the children have suffered trauma in their own lives. Some may have special needs or mental health difficulties. Others have self-harmed or indeed attempted to take their own lives. Some have not been to school for years, and many had no father figure to look up to. My difficulty around this, Frank, is that a lot of this is known both by social services, by education authorities, and unfortunately it almost appears as if children need to be criminalised to get access to the services that are really going to help them here. Now, having said that, I think that the approach in the Juvenile Justice Centre is really good, and you know the levels of care and compassion, and on occasions control in terms of the children's behaviour, is helping keep them safe and helping to address some of these underlying needs. So I suppose for me it is, well, do we need to criminalise them to do that? Is there not another way? Is there not an opportunity for more effective early intervention to actually divert them away from the criminal justice process?
I suppose some people who'll be listening to this programme who've been on the receiving end of what these young people have done will suggest that you're making excuses for them, Brendan.
Well, absolutely, and I suppose if we were all to get the start in lives that I was able to get, and I would say you were able to get, you'd say it's a level playing field. But you know, some of these children struggle in their early years and their relationships. They are children that are out of the control of their families. They're out of the control of their communities. They have limited respect for others, other people's property. But, you know, the most important thing is actually they have very limited respect for themselves and the value of their own lives. Now, it depends what sort of a society we want to build here, Frank. Is it one that tries to restore children with that very poor start in life so that they can become effective members of our community? I think that should be the aim of us all.
Why do so many of them come from the Catholic community?
I honestly don't know the answer to that, Frank, and I wouldn't even want to start to hazard guesses. But, you know, the linkages and connections between social deprivation, high unemployment, poor academic attainment, are all factors that contribute to crime. But, the most important one for me is around that nurturing relationship within families. And, you know, sometimes, without a kind of a positive male figure within the household that can help reinforce the parameters of behaviour, somebody that they can look up to, and especially for boys, that they can look up to and see as a kind of a role model. If that's not there, then the tendency is that they'll sometimes run with the crowd and get into the wrong sort of company, get themselves involved in delinquent behaviour, antisocial behaviour, and then start to dabble in drugs and alcohol, and before you know it, then they end up presented at the door of the criminal justice system.
Yeah, but that's equally a description of the Protestant community as well. 76% of the young people who were incarcerated over the last year were from a Catholic background. You say you don't know, and maybe it's just a blip. Maybe it could be different next time round. The other thing is a considerable number of them are in and out. They're regular visitors to some form of custody. So is the system, you know, even though it's a glowing report on what's happening within Woodlands, there must be some failings within it if they're being scooped again, in the courts again, sentenced again.
Frank, the reality of it is that the children are released back into the community, into their families, or back into the care of the state through the children's homes, etc. And often, you know, that's bringing them back into exactly the same situation that presented them to the justice system in the first instance. You know, and unless you have the support available to try and help families deal with these children, the chances are they're going to meet up with their mates, and before you know it, they're back in again.
Is there a possibility they're happier in Woodlands than they are in the surrounds of their own personal home environment?
I would say for a number of them they are. Some of these children are under threat from paramilitaries, such as the nature of their behaviours, and what's going on within some communities, and what paramilitary violence and trying to get a foothold within communities, that somehow they're dealing with these children. So some of them are there under threat. Some of them realise that actually, you know, in the juvenile justice centre, there are people who care for them, who are prepared to ensure that they're warm, that they're nurtured, that, you know, a lot of the basic needs that maybe haven't been available to them in the community are being addressed within the centre.
How comfortable is it in the centre?
That's not what we want, Frank.
Yeah. Well, sadly, you know, if you're coming from an abusive background, or from a background where people are luring you into drugs, or maybe your parents have no interest in you, maybe you don't have parents, it's, you know, an alternative would be attractive. But there will be those who will be listening and be saying that it needs to be just a bit more punitive. It needs to be a bit more as if it's a punishment. I know the idea is to take away people's liberty. That's the punishment. But if it is, and I don't want to use the word cosy in a tabloid sort of way, but if it is so appealing to young people, that they find it attractive, that it's almost like a cool place to be, well, then they're winning both ways. If they're out and about and they can't get on, they just break the law and they're back in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't think it's a cool place. I think it's a very safe environment. And, you know, the most fundamental thing that we can give to these children is for them to feel safe. That's the starting point on where you start to work with the underlying issues that brought them in the first instance. Being deprived of your liberty is quite traumatic. I visit the prisons regularly. I report on them. And for people to think that somehow this is easy, they just lounge around the place, you know, these children are required to engage in the regime that's there. So, you know, I remember reviewing a complaint once in the Juvenile Justice Centre, and the complaint from the young person was that they had to go to class. Well, you know what? I was very happy about that. And, you know, these are children who have been, have been absenting themselves from school. Sometimes they're, they've been excluded from education as a result of learning difficulties on occasions. And sometimes it's only when you get them into the centre that you realise, oh my goodness, they're undiagnosed. These children are on a spectrum here. So, you know, there are people who slip through the net, Frank. I'm just grateful, and I think we in Northern Ireland should be grateful that we have a place like Woodlands, which is really trying to deal with some very difficult and challenging children and trying to ensure that we keep them out of the mainstream criminal justice system as adults. And so, you know, there is an underlying message here in the report which is saying, look, occupancy levels, that's great if the numbers are down, and that's the way we want to keep it, because we don't want it to be a nursery for adult prison. And that's the way it was, Frank. That's, you know, there was a progression from the Juvenile Justice Centre or, you know, youth detention into the Young Offenders Centre, the secure college, and then on to adult prison. We need to break that cycle. And, you know, this, from what I can see and what I've been looking at over the last 14 years, represents real progress. And I was acknowledging that in the report today.
Well, no better man to pass comment as you've been watching it so closely for such a long time, Brendan. Thank you for coming on. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Brendan McGuigan speaking to us, 90-333-105, Chief Inspector of Criminal Justice in Northern Ireland. Your opinions are very welcome indeed. 028-90-333-105. But that centre in Bangor is being described as a jewel in the crown. Good morning, 90-333-105. Tommy, yes, it is being broadcast. Tommy says the criminal justice system needs some praise. It is getting it this morning and it is good to hear. Joe isn't so positive. He says, Frank, you mentioned the victims of criminals, whether they are old or young, it doesn't matter. Remember the victims and stop highlighting the great work being done by the great work being done for hoods. Yeah, I know this hoods word is used considerably in society today, but when you listen to Brendan McGuigan speak, when you hear him make reference to children who may be on some form of spectrum, who don't have any parental guidance, they are just left to wilt. They are left to grow on barren ground. What chance do they have? They're just sucked up into a system whereby they will be taken advantage of, where they will be abused, where they will be disadvantaged. They are in a crisis from the moment they're kids right through until they are teenagers. So do we not have to be more sympathetic towards those children? And instead of seeing them as housebreakers and worse than housebreakers, you know, some of them are in for very, very serious crime. But instead of seeing them as being people who you wouldn't want ever to cast an eye on, why don't we see them as part of our society who just need some help? Is that possible? I don't know from some of the texts and the emails that are coming through here. You certainly are lacking in sympathy with a number of these attacks. I'll read more of them and the emails as well. I want to speak to Jim, who has a point to make about Woodlands. Jim, good morning.
Morning, Frank.
Jim, you're seeing this from a legal perspective.
Yeah, Frank. I'm a solicitor, basically practicing in Belfast, and my experience of Woodlands and with what they do for kids has been very, very positive. I can understand that you're getting some negative stuff through there, but it's not as simple. Sometimes it's just to say that all kids are villains or all kids are necessary. Some of these kids, as some of your contributors have pointed out, and perhaps the reports have pointed out, are on the spectrum. Some of these kids basically don't have a chance. It strikes me from talking to you, Frank, that you come from good parents, good folk. I know I do. And unfortunately, some of these children have had people behind them who brought them up who don't care about them, who make it quite obvious they don't care about them, who sometimes don't even care about themselves. So these kids have no mentors, they have no role models, they have no sort of sense of themselves or how to behave or how to behave in a social context. And Woodlands, I have to tell you, are great in terms of how they try and address that, how they try and mentor these kids, how they try and give them something to reach for, you know.
That is important, and it's what I was referring to just as you were coming through on the line, that we have to be more sympathetic. Having said that, if you've had your house broken into, if your elderly mother has been beaten with, you know, maybe a fist while she's been robbed in her bedroom, it's hard to garner the sympathy for the person who did that. When you go back and you look at where they might be coming from, yes, but you don't naturally go back. You might on a morning like this morning while we're having this discussion, but you really just see a bad egg there, don't you?
Absolutely, Frank. I can entirely understand that too. I mean, one of the greatest things I think we have as Northern Irish people, given everything that we've been through, all these decades of troubles, is compassion, a great sense of humour and compassion. But even the best compassion, the best sense of humour in the world, and a given nature, can find it very difficult to reconcile how someone can behave with such cruelty and indifference and coldness to another human being. But the point I'm making is, I'm not saying it should be excused, it should definitely be punished. It has to be punished, and it also has to be marked by society's completely unacceptable behaviour. But if we don't start to understand the reasons behind a lot of this offending behaviour and what underlies it, well, then we'll never fix it. You know, I mean, I think we're living in a world now where government cuts this Tory government have no concern for young people, little concern for older people either. In fact, sometimes I wonder, do they have concern for people at all? And this so-called austerity program that they've operated over the last 8 or 9 years has not only crippled the health system, the criminal justice system, but it's caused a lot of these problems. You know, if you've got deprivation, don't heap deprivation upon deprivation. I mean, we can see it in Belfast. We can see how things have changed, thank God, since the ceasefires. We can see how things are starting to improve as there's investment in the community and in people. You take that away, you take away that sense of peace and belief that's been started to be fostered, and you leave a vacuum, well, then something's going to fill it. And the other big problem, of course, we have as a society right across the world is drugs.
Well, I'm sure if there's a representative from the Tory government here, they would argue with you in relation to your analysis of where their priorities are. As for drugs, that is, you know, that's such a relevant debate at the moment. And I'm not talking about medicinal cannabis, because we've talked that to death here on the show, and there are many strong arguments in favour of medicinal cannabis. But it looks like as if we could be getting much closer to cannabis being legalised, and then the war would be against harder drugs. You know, and I don't want this conversation to go off on a tangent now about cannabis, but as someone in a legal profession, would you see that as a plus here?
It's a very, very tough question, because there are many fine arguments being made. Peter Hitchens is a right-wing commentator. Well, he's perceived as a right-wing commentator, but he's got some very useful things to say on this. And the way he sees it is that it could be a very slippery slope, and that if you start to sort of say, well, look, we can work with people who use cannabis for recreational purposes, not medicinal purposes. Medicinal is entirely different. I've got sympathy for those children that are seen on the news, and indeed for folk who suffer from conditions such as MS, who could perhaps benefit from controlled and prescribed use of drugs. But to simply then just say, well, let's throw the baby out of the bathwater, let's make recreational use also acceptable, that's dangerous. Because what it basically does is it sends out a message that drug use per se, perhaps, is something that we can work with, that we can moderate, that we can license. And then you've got to ask yourself, well, then what's the next step? What's the next drug that we start to regard as maybe not so hard and maybe a bit softer? And then you've got problems, you know, in terms of recreational license. But for medicinal purposes, yes, I can see the arguments.
So in the meantime, putting the spotlight back on Woodlands and all the traumas that anyone bringing up children have to face in this day and age, when you go in there as a solicitor, when you're dealing with young people who have been through I don't want to use the word ordeal, we've been through the horror of visiting hurt upon someone else, and it's horrific for the person who's on the receiving end, but then they've been caught and they're now going through some form of paying back to society. Do you get a sense of sympathy for that young person?
Well, yes, I do, but I also have a good deal of sympathy for the victim. And I think that we can't lose sight of the victims in these cases. I think that what I'm trying to say, Frank, is that the kids sometimes, not all the time, some kids, I hate to say this, some people, we've all met them. Some people are just bad and they enjoy being bad. But there are some people who basically haven't had God love them, the gift that we've been given, which is compassion and empathy, because we've had caring parents, caring uncles and aunts and siblings, people who teach us the value of caring and working with each other in a community. They're basically not brought up, they're thrown up, and they're thrown out onto the street. And that's where your problems start, because then they start to learn the law of the jungle, and then they start to look at that pensioner or that other child or that young mother basically as food, as fodder. And that's what we have to guard against. There has to be more education, there has to be an understanding that parents have to make an effort with kids. They can't just give up on them. None of us can. We've got to keep on hanging in there. We've just got to keep on doing our best.
I see an interesting question. Just finally, Jim, I really appreciate your call. From a lady called Susie, and Tom and Brenda are saying similar things about the ages that we're talking about. We can be talking about someone as old as 17 here. We're not talking about 9-year-olds, but there are some very young people in the system. But the majority of these people are 16, 17 that we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but the problems, I would point out, Frank, the problems for many of them start when they're 5, start when they're 3, and for some of these kids start when they're born, because, you know, getting back to your other point about drugs, if you've got a mother and father, for instance, hooked on heroin, and they have a baby, they have a kid, do you really think that they're going to have that child as their prime concern? All parents, we tend to think, have their children as their prime concern, but if you've got people who are in the thrall of a substance abuse habit, whether it's alcohol or drugs or something else, well, then that child comes last, and that's where the problems start.
Jim, it's a realistic commentary on where we are in life. I really appreciate that. Thank you. Vivian has a point to make as well. Good morning, Vivian.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very well, Vivian. What's your take on this praise for Woodlands?
I think Woodlands is a fantastic facility within Northern Ireland. I have a background in working with young people who are leaving the care system, who are making the transition from being looked after and accommodated to independent living skills. I am the regional coordinator for Northern Ireland for Smart Recovery. I own Hydrees, the local flotation centre, the only one in Northern Ireland. And I think in terms of, it's quite easy to look at deprivation and to look at poverty and various different things. I was in McGabbery at the beginning of the year, and we were chatting and we were looking at trauma. I think everything starts and ends in trauma. And, you know, there was a couple of guys there who were saying, you know, they had parents who were struggling with addiction. They had parents who were struggling with mental health. And there was one young man there who had said, you know, none of that applied to me. I had loving parents. I came from a loving home. I had everything that I wanted. And so sometimes I think we fail to recognise that about 30 years ago, maybe even more than that, the role of a parent was changed dramatically with children's rights and children, you know, and there was lots of things that came in to protect children, which was fantastic. But I think it left parents in a very disempowered place where they didn't know how to deal with these behaviours. So children now, they have no boundaries, they are stuck in front of technology, because sometimes if their behaviours become challenging. So I think this is something that affects the whole of society, and it's not just a segmented part of it. We have an issue just now, a personal issue at school with my own son, with a young boy who's 5 years old. He has, you know, his children coming home from school with black eyes, there's been, you know, alleged sexual assaults. There's lots of things going on. But I think we're also in a bit of a, you know, I think sometimes the services are stuck and they're unsure where to go, and there's lots of legislation and lots of red tape that then enable these children to almost be boundless, that they have no idea of right or wrong. They have no idea of safe and dangerous. And I think somewhere like Woodlands provides a really safe and structured environment for, if you can get in with the right interventions young enough, then it saves on these adult services much later in life.
Well, I'd like to think that the school setup, the world of education, would be able to cope with an allegation made by one pupil against another pupil at a very young age of some form of sexual assault. And sadly, it does happen. But I'd like to think that they would be able to have in place structures to deal with that. Similarly, if a child is, you know, blackening the eye of another kid, which is obviously much more common, has always been very common in the school environment, you would like to think again that the structures are in place there to protect the innocent child and to get the help that is needed for a young child that is violent or a young child that is in some way sexually motivated. These are very serious issues and serious concerns, but they are a reminder of, as you say, why Woodlands would be an essential service. I see people complaining about the cost of Woodlands per year to the Exchequer, and they're saying, you know, there's someone saying Woodlands is costing so much money every year to look after these young lowlifes. If you just see the person as rubbish and toss them into the bin, you're not going to resolve the problem. We need, as you've said, as Brenton McGuigan has said, indeed as Jim the solicitor has said, we need to be looking in a praiseworthy way at a system that is open to the scrutiny that Woodlands is open to.
I think, in terms of a praiseworthy way, I think it's about bringing people to cause. And I think it's about, you know, people can be at effect of things that have happened in life and can quite happily stand back and say, well, I'm like this because you're like that. And I'm like this because my father was like this, my mother was like this, my grandfather was like this. And it's almost like a learnt behaviour that goes in from programming at a very young age. Every second of every day, we're met by between 2 and 40 million, up to 40 million pieces of information. Our brain can only process 134 bits of that. So we delete information, we distort information, and we generalise information to fit our view of the world. So if we think, I am vulnerable, other people are unreliable, and the world is a dangerous place, we will find pieces of information within our environment that fit our view of the world. So even when what sometimes some other people can see as dangerous behaviour, as an inability to cope, to regulate, to whatever it is, as that person navigating within their own world, they see that as normal behaviour. And in terms of addiction, addiction's a behaviour. And I think instead of asking why the addiction and working with the addiction, we ask why the pain, and we work with the pain, because pain is the main driver and motivator for most of these behaviours that are displayed by these young people.
Okay, interesting analysis. Vivian, thank you indeed. Vivian also raised a thing about where we are in this day and age with young people. Are they any worse today than they were 30 years ago? I'm not at all convinced. You can let us know what you think on that very issue. Are the children of today worse today than they would have been 30 years ago?